Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks. Thanks for joining us. Let me introduce us. I'm Robert Wright of Blogging Heads TV, and this is an episode of Worldwise. You are Demba Boundi, a freelance journalist in Mali, where you are now, and you're joining us to help explain to us what's going on in Mali, which has been very active and in the news lately. Thanks very much for taking the time.
It's a pleasure to be on.
Now, you know, what I think Americans know about Mali is that there's recently been a military intervention by France, and that by some accounts, that is responsible for the hostage-taking in Algeria, a crisis that, as we tape this, is still unresolved, although I should say there's also evidence that hostage-taking had been in the planning for a while, going back before the French military intervention. But at any rate, we have read here that at least in much of Mali, this French intervention is very popular, and people are waving French flags and stuff. Is that your experience where you are?
Absolutely. The French intervention, it's been going on for, this is day 8, I believe, and it was a popular impression that people really appreciate the intervention, because a lot of people I talked to said it came at the right time, and so people are very much in favor of the French intervention, and a lot of them are saying, had the French troops not intervened, we would have probably not been where we are now in terms of being secure, being safe, even in the capital city, which is still far from Kona, which was the first town to be attacked 8 years ago. So, for example, in downtown Bamako, where I am right now, you can see a lot of little French flags, small flags being sold by you know, people from all ages, really. And for me, this is the first time. I'm 40 years old, and I've never seen the French flag being sold in the streets of Mali the way I did for the past few days.
Right. And we should say there's actually a history of some antipathy between Mali and France. France was Mali was a colony of France's until 1960.
Correct.
So are you in, you're in southern Mali. The intervention is mainly about northern Mali, and I guess one town that had been threatened before the French intervened was the town of Kona, which is, I guess, in the southern part of northern Mali. But what you're observing is in the southern part of Mali. You're in the capital, is that right?
I am in Bamako, which is central Mali. It's southern Kona, and it's south of all the regions which are currently occupied. We feel the occupation in a certain way, given the number of internal displaced people. We have a lot of IDPs living in Bamako, staying in host families, because culturally Mali is a very welcoming country. I mean, I should say, people are very warm here. So we don't have refugee camps the way you would see it in Kenya or Somalia or other parts of Africa where similar social problems have happened, but we can definitely feel the effect of the war in Bamako here, given the number of northerners now living among us. And also, if you look at the school demographics, a lot of children were forced to move and pursue their education in southern Mali. So, I mean, we have some huge collateral effects, I should say, of the northern occupation, but on the safety side, we are not feeling it as much as people living in Sévaré, for example, or in Kona, or Timbuktu, Gao, and Kidal.
Okay. Now, let me try to give you my dim understanding of how it came to be that you had this situation and these displaced people and everything. And then you can correct me, because I'm sure I've got it either out now wrong, or at least I'll put it too simply. But first of all, there is this minority ethnic group called the Tuareg, which lives in northern Mali. And for a long time, they are nomadic people. For a long time, some of them have wanted to be a separate state. They've had separatist aspirations. And I gather that after the fall of the Gaddafi regime in Libya, some arms found their way down to Mali, and also some Tuaregs, because I gather that some Tuaregs had worked for the Gaddafi regime and as security forces and were armed. So anyway, when the regime fell, this led to more armed Tuaregs, some of whom wanted a separate state. And so there was a rebellion in northern Mali. The Tuaregs, I guess, were successful in securing control of that land, but then they were displaced by Islamic radicals. Most notably, I guess, a group that's called Al-Qaeda in the, Islamic Maghreb or something?
Correct.
It's called Al-Qaeda, but it's not the same as the other Al-Qaeda. There's some kind of affiliation, but it's not clear how close the connection is. So these people started behaving like the Taliban in Afghanistan, you know, very harsh version of Sharia law, and I assume that that's one reason that there's been the displacement of people from northern Mali to central and southern Mali. So that's my understanding of what happened. What would you correct in that or add to that?
Well, everything you just said, Bob, is very true. There's nothing to correct there. The only piece of information I would add to that is that disintegration, there you go, of our state, the state of Mali, didn't happen overnight. You know, for the past 20 years, I would say even more than that, there has not been any solid policy nationwide to address the gap that we have between northern Mali and southern Mali, mainly in terms of infrastructure, for example, in terms of potentials to develop agriculture or anything else. So I guess what can be added to your assessment of the situation is a lack of political commitment to really provide some more support and assistance to northern Mali. Because, as you said, the population is predominantly light-skinned. They call themselves Tuareg. But they are not the majority. This is a mistake many people make. But there are more people living in northern Mali with darker skin than people with lighter skin. So the Tuaregs, per se, represent 2% of the entire northern population. So as a result...
You said 2%?
2% of the entire population living in northern Mali. Because...
Well, that's pretty small.
Yeah, it's very minor. And then the mistake that people make is to say, well, all people living in northern Mali are Tuaregs. It's like somebody making the statement that all people living in Salt Lake City are Mormons, which is not true. So what I'm going to say is that politically, Mali has been very, very, I don't know, we have been neglecting the Tuareg cause. We have been really not paying a lot of attention to their needs. We have not been listening to their request. As a result, the anger grew, and then when the Libyan crisis began, we had some of our, the Libyan troops were Malians, and when Gaddafi's regime fell, of course, these people had no other country, no other home to come back to except Mali, because they had their Malian nationality, their Malian passports, Unfortunately, what happened was a mistake made by the former government of Mali. They let these people back into the country with the weapons. And those weapons were actually weapons, given up by the coalition forces in Libya. So as a result, they came back to the communities and where they belong, actually. And then they started threatening people, doing some, committing thefts, committing crimes, and of various sorts. And in the end, I guess Al-Qaeda took advantage of that lack of government, lack of administration, and lack of justice system to just take over and terrorize the people, because the arms being cut, legs being cut, the Sharia rule. Mali is not about that. I mean, you don't see anywhere in Mali that a Sharia rule or Sharia law is being imposed. So the fact that the state government was weak enough not to to have any control over what was happening in northern Mali really aggravated the situation. So your assessment couldn't be more true.
Okay, so are you saying that only a small minority of people in northern Mali supported the original insurrection by the Tuaregs, you know, leaving aside the subsequent rule by the by Al-Qaeda and the Islamic Maghreb? I mean, you're saying that, that even the original insurrection by the Tuaregs, I guess more than a year ago, was actually opposed by a large majority of the people even in northern Mali?
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And do those people, you're saying they are ethnically different from the Tuaregs, they have darker skin, do they speak a different language and have a different religion or what?
They do speak different languages, but also understand the language spoken by the Tuareg, which is Tamashek. This is their language. Mm-hmm. If you know, for example, of the famous Malian musical band, it's called Tinariwen, so they speak that language. I mean, a very minor part of the small number of people in northern Mali speak that language. So, of course, there are other people like the Fulanis. These are mostly cattle herders. So they can interact. They can speak some of the language that the Tuareg speak. And Tuareg people speak Tamashek, as I said earlier, but they also understand other languages. For example, most of them are fluent in Arabic. A majority of them would speak Songoe, which is a language spoken by the Sorai people living mostly in the Gao and Timbuktu area. So you find yourself in this very diverse linguistic environment, people speaking different languages, but managing to find a way to understand each other using a lingua franca, mm-hmm. which happens in Mali a lot, so because we have originally 19 national languages across the country of Mali, but Bambara is the most dominant one that most people understand, including the Tuareg people, because this is the language you're most likely to speak when you travel south to west or east to west.
Okay, so there's not a problem of actual comprehension between the Tuaregs and other people, even though they are ethnically distinct. So is it the case that, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So is it the case that even the Tuaregs, by and large, that the Tuaregs who might have supported the original insurrection by the Tuaregs themselves oppose the current Islamic radical government in northern Mali?
And that's the unfortunate aspect of this crisis, because when the problems started this time, when the occupation began a year ago, we did not see, and when I say we other Malians, we did not see any sort of resistance or condemnation of the Islamist progression. Being outspoken, denounced by other Tuareg people. As a result, we all started to believe that they were all speaking the same language, that they all had the same plan to destabilize Mali and then to bring in an idea of secession. So we did not hear any Tuareg voice, speaking against the occupation, which is why the popular Malian belief holds it that all Tuaregs are now the same, regardless of their position, regardless of their understanding of the current situation.
So then people in central and southern Mali do think of the Tuaregs as being on the other side of this battle. They think of them now as the enemy, along with any outsiders who are Islamic radicals who have come in.
Absolutely, because we have people fighting in the, when the occupation began, we got people from Yemen, we got people from Mauritania, people from even neighboring Burkina Faso. We have a lot of nationalities, which is very striking if you look at the nature, the complexity of this Malian crisis, because there are so many foreigners. We even have people from the Cape Verde, which is a Western African state. So it's really this melting pot of fighters, and for us to really understand, who is here and why X or Y are fighting, we really need to come to this level of physical or French occupation deal, so that we can clear the geography, have a sense of who is where, and which is why Mali, across the country of Mali now, you have a huge police presence, a huge military presence with checkpoints and with people getting their vehicles searched and etc. So I guess the long term goal is to really make sure that we know who is doing what, but there are other nationalities in addition to the Tuaregs who are fighting, who are our enemies, who are fighting Mali. So.
Okay, so it sounds like a large majority of Malians support the French intervention, and I gather that you would say even that a majority of those who live in northern Mali support the French intervention. Is that right?
Absolutely. I spoke to some residents of Gao, which is another major city, northern Mali. The day Kona was liberated, the next day the French troops bombarded the city of Gao because thanks to the satellite pictures, they were able to locate the jihadists' gathering points. So they destroyed some of their belongings, and the population was very excited to know that in the end, somebody decided to do something. In the end, something was being done about this crisis. So because what people seem to forget, and some of your listeners or viewers might be in the same dark area, is that Mali has been under occupation for more than a year now, because it started when former President Atite was in office. And it's only last week with the French intervention that we started to see the beginning of some liberation movement. So, if you do a census now, I'm sure that 99.90% of Malians are in favor of the French intervention. The only percentage who would be opposed is probably the Islamists themselves, I would say.
And some Tuaregs, perhaps, who are not Islamists as well?
Exactly, yep.
Uh-huh. Now, okay, so were you just alluding to the fact that, about a year ago, in early 2012, the democratically elected government of Mali was overthrown by a coup, right?
That's correct.
And I gather that the sponsors of the coup were unhappy that the government wasn't doing enough about northern Mali, enough in a military sense, that they weren't confronting the Tuareg uprising or something?
This was the number one rationale of the coup d'etat, as we heard it from the captain, Sanogo, who was the leader of the coup. And, stunningly, ever since he took over with the committee, and then later on after the coup, there was a lot of pressure from the outside world, the UN, the ECOWAS, the African Union, and seemingly, he had to step down, which he did, which gave way to current interim president, Mr. Traoré, to take over, because he was then the Speaker of the House. So according to the Constitution, he was the only qualified person to take over. And of course, this took a lot of discussion and a lot of, it took a few weeks before this was approved. But then we were surprised as Malians to see the same people who instigated the coup not do anything about the Northern crisis. The first discourse we heard from them was there was no weapon. We had to find all the logistical equipment to go fight the Islamists, the jihadists. And then later on, we heard that Guinea was blocking some of our weapons at the port. But to be honest, it doesn't really hold up. It doesn't make any sense, because what we later on found out is that these people were working on a strategy to still stay in power, no matter what. And meanwhile, the suffering of the northern Malians was still going on, which is why when France came in, all of a sudden, it just shut down all the anti-voices, all the counter-voices who were still supporting the March 2012 coup. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does make sense. And I gather that you would hope that after this is all over, if it is all over, and the French leave or whatever, that the current government, which took power by a coup, would give way again to a democratically elected government. I mean, is that the hope of a lot of Malians?
This is the hope, and this is the plan, and this is the fight that my generation, Malians who are between 30 and 50, would have to take on. This is our next big step, our next challenge, because we have been screwed by politicians, and we are not going to allow any going backward after this is all resolved. And the plan is to have a stable country of Mali, and the next step would be to organize free elections so we can have some legitimate power. And we will have to sit down again and revise, portions of our constitution, because the way things are happening now and the way our military has operated for the past 20 years is a clear result of the state government's inability to handle our safety and security. And what I mean by that is that starting 1991, when we had a military coup, which actually brought former President ATT into power, because then he had to overthrow the Moussa Traoré regime, which had been ruling for 23 years, from 68 to 91. So when ATT became the interim president, his mandate, his task was to organize elections and give the power back to civilians. As a result, Mr. Konaré was democratically elected by popular vote in 1992. He served two terms of 5 years each, and then had to step down by constitutional rule in 2002. Which gave way to new elections, after which ATT became president and then ran for this country for 5 years up to 2007. So from 07 to 2012, he was in office. His term was almost ending when the coup happened last March. So for the past 20 years, under both former President Konaré and former President ATT, our military has been in a very, very bad shape. And what I mean by that is that the system of recruitment in the army was not based on people's willingness to wear the uniform and defend their country simply out of love and patriotism. It was based on family relationships. For example, you get to become a National Guard or a police officer because your uncle is a top general in the army. So as a result, when we now face this situation to face the rebellion up north, we didn't see the military where we were expecting them to come defend the country. And the top generals of the army refused to sign the order to send the troops to go fight, because they didn't want their own sons and daughters to go die. And we later on found out that there was no weapon at all. And now we feel very sorry for our army. And I guess to complete my answer to your question, after the elections and after everything else, we as Malians will have to sit down and really sympathize with our army to support them and to help them get better reorganized. This is a huge challenge that we have to really address.
Okay. Now, in the meanwhile, France has troops in northern Mali. Now, traditionally, foreign interventions of this sort often run into trouble, and foreign troops get bogged down in countries. American troops got bogged down in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and Afghanistan actually has some parallels here because of the nature of the enemy, you might say. Is there a reason to be optimistic that the French mission can succeed in fairly short order?
I am sure that it's going to be a successful mission, and I'm sure, as you said, it's a very different mission from what's happening in Afghanistan, because the problem is this. Had the French not intervened, as I said, we would not be talking the way we are right now. And it was a timely intervention, and I think it's been strategically planned. I spent some time on the military base out at Senou, accompanying some journalists visiting from France and the New York Times and other news outlets. My impression, what I gathered from talking to the military, was that they have a clear agenda. They have a clear job description. It's stopping the Islamist progression, reinforcing security in Sévaré and pushing them back to their base. And I think confining them into that other half of Mali so that we can have a full control of the geography of the territory of Mali. But I do understand people's concern when they say that a foreign intervention might cause more troubles. But in the case of Mali, I am confident that it's not going to be the same, because Malians are ready to take over. The next step that we have after the liberation is definitely being proactive politically, having elections organized, and taking our own destiny into control. So, I would definitely go against any suspicion that France is here to really take over or try to recolonize us.
Yeah, no, I don't think they want to do that. But I gather one of the advantages they have, in your view, in the French troops, that is that in northern Mali, most of the towns that they would want to liberate from their current government are overwhelmingly on the side of the French. So they will, in most places, they will have the overwhelming support of the local population.
Absolutely, and this is something that's really working well for the French. I don't think they would disagree with that analysis. And for them to be doing something more than what their president, their commander-in-chief François Hollande, has instructed them, would totally go against those principles based on shared love and mutual support that they can feel from the Malian counterparts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how do you see this unfolding? If it is successful, will Malian troops follow in the wake of the French and secure control of the towns where the French have chased out the insurgents? Or I know they're separate from that. There is an effort to organize African troops from neighboring nations under a regional umbrella to offer some assistance. So how do you see this playing out if it is successful?
Well, major task is going to be to reorganize our army, but I don't expect them to leave ASAP right after the regions are liberated. I expect them to stay for some time to provide technical logistical training to our troops. I also expect them to still be, on standby to make sure that there is not a second rebellion right after their victory and the victory of the Malian army teaming up with the coalition forces. So I do expect them to really do some monitoring, some follow-up training before leaving. But I guess once we have the elections organized and with a minimum number of French troops, I think this is when they might probably want to be going back to France or wherever they came from.
Mm-hmm. I gather that there must be some, although the Tuaregs are to some extent a nomadic people, I assume that there are towns in northern Mali that are basically Tuareg towns, right? And I assume that that's where there will be the French troops will face the most resistance. Is that
correct?
Right?
This is the first statement, and I believe, and we kind of expect them to be, more present in those areas than in central or southern Mali, for example. Although the instruction might be for the Malian army to be more vigilant in those areas, because, as you know, terrorism can have many routes, and we don't want to have any unpleasant surprise with that. So I'm sure they will strategically assess the situation and be very smart about that. So
we were saying that. There will be more resistance in these Tuareg towns because the Tuaregs, of course, they harbor some resentment against the Malian government and presumably against the French who have come in to support it. And although some of them may have mixed feelings about the Islamic radicals, I guess there is some support for the Islamic radicals among the Tuareg population, right?
Exactly, yeah.
What would you, I gather then that once, if the Islamic radicals are evicted from some of these Tuareg towns, there's going to be some work to do in winning over the local population, right? And winning over, as we say, the hearts and the minds of the local Tuareg population. And do you have any ideas about how that would get done?
Well, my recommendation, and we actually started thinking about that already, because as a media person, we are very much targeting the radio and the television. We are very much hoping that the press can really do a huge job in educating the people in the local languages by telling them first what the French intervention means. And second of all, explaining, once we get the end result, which is liberating northern Mali. There's too much noise. Once we get the northern Mali liberated, these are the next step. Because I figure in a population where illiterate people are the majority, explanation that's needed for people to understand what's coming next. So radio, and I believe we have traditional history tellers here, people who are very much skillful in explaining things to people, will be really on a very delicate mission in the country to explain what this French intervention means and what the next steps will be. Of course, there are other ideas politically. Some aspects of our constitution or the way our decentralization system has been shaped. How can we change that to really reflect what we want to achieve as an end result? So I'm sure that politically people have some idea, but in due time, we will have our say because we will not let this opportunity go by without expressing our views at least. So,
okay. Now, what do you think the ultimate goal of Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb is? I've seen them characterized as, to some extent, a criminal gang. I mean, they're involved in drug smuggling and so on, and they had an identity before they started calling themselves Al Qaeda. You know, they had some other name, so they're not really an offshoot of Al Qaeda, although they've chosen to adopt that name. And I guess they've embraced some of the ideology of Al Qaeda. But suppose the French had not intervened, what would their goal be? Would what is it that they would they just They just want to secure control of northern Mali and use it for their criminal enterprises, or they would want to spread their influence further, or what? What do you think the agenda of that group is?
I mean, all of the above. They would probably seize control of northern Mali, which is a huge geographical area, which is also a very successful area where drug trafficking or narcotics trafficking is flourishing. And they would probably extend their domination onto other neighboring countries, because Mali has a central role in Western Africa. Given its geography, because we share borders with 7 countries, including Algeria, Mauritania, Burkina Faso, Ivory Coast, Niger, Senegal, and Mauritania. So all these countries could feel, you know, some of the repercussions of the Malian territory being occupied by extremist forces like Al-Qaeda. And as you said, they are very skillful in playing with the names, with the acronyms. Sometimes you hear Mujwayo, sometimes you hear Ansar Dine, and sometimes you hear MNLA. I mean, from my standpoint, I see all these groups being the same. But their goal was not only dominating northern Mali, but imposing Sharia over the entire West African region. And you can tell from what Nigeria has been dealing with for the past few years with the Boko Haram, which is also another branch of the jihadist movement. So you get all these phenomena being really played out and affecting our national security system. And I think it's high time that ECOWAS, which is a sub-regional organization in the African Union, starts including this into their global fight for terrorism agenda, because otherwise, it's true, it's Mali's turn today, unfortunately, but you know, it might be Algeria's turn in the next few months, and Burkina Faso is not totally safe, it might be their turn as well. So there are a lot of risks to just want to address this issue only at the national level, thinking, oh well, it's a Malian issue, let's handle it on a national level and just move on. So my recommendation would be we should definitely address this issue at the global level, because terrorism, I said it before, has many roots, and it's like cancer. I mean, it will grow in another part of Africa, I'm sure. So we need to stay vigilant.
And are there signs that at the regional level, you know, within Africa, you are starting to see the possibility of regional organizations taking responsibility for security in cases like this? I mean, I forget the acronym under which African troops from several nations are being organized. I think it's actually a regional economic organization that's the umbrella organization. But has there been, you know, progress in that regard in recent years?
Yeah, the organization is called ECOWAS, Economic Community of Western African State. They had pledged to provide some support in the number of fighters, in the number of troops. And I think already I spent some time with the Nigerian troops and some troops coming from Togo. But I know Chad has pledged, for example, to, even though Chad is in between West Africa and Eastern Africa, they pledged to have 2,000 troops in Mali, and Senegal is contributing to the effort. Guinea has pledged also 120 soldiers, and there are people. People were asking about Ivory Coast, whose president Moussa Ouattara is the current chair of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. But Ivory Coast is in a very difficult situation because they are working on restructuring their army. So, but we do have, I mean, total we have over 5,300 military personnel who have been pledged to come and support the French troops, who are already 1,400 people on the ground, and they brought a lot of logistics, they brought a lot of material. England is definitely helping out with air transmission aspect of the operations. And ground level, it's the French army, which is doing an amazing job. So I got to spend some time with the military trying to get their sense of what that support could mean to them. And I think that by the middle of next week, by Thursday, we should have the entire personnel ready for the ground fight, because the air bombing has stopped after only 2 days, and I think they are working on securing the potential targets that Islamists might be attacking. But we are hoping that by the middle of next week we have everybody with us here in Mali.
You mean all the French troops on the ground, or the Africans as well?
Both the French and the African coalition.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So I gather it's the case that most of the Malian population is Muslim, right?
Correct.
But they reject the Islamic extremism of the group that's governing much of northern Mali at the moment.
Say that again. Sorry.
Well, I just wanted to note that the opposition to the Islamic extremists in northern Mali is overwhelmingly coming from Muslims in Mali. So it is, you might say moderate Muslims are overwhelmingly the population of Mali.
That's correct.
Okay. Let me. This has been really valuable. I really appreciate your time, Demba. Let me ask you a final question that I always ask people when I'm talking to them in other countries. What is the view of the United States, generally speaking, if you can generalize? How do Malians view the United States? I don't mean just in the context of the current crisis, but more generally, what is the attitude, if it's possible to characterize the attitude of the average Malian toward the United States, been?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and I worked with the Peace Corps. I'm sure you know the Peace Corps. So I worked, I helped Peace Corps with their training, and I remember working with lots of trainees who would then become Peace Corps volunteers, and we have an activity that we usually do with Malian counterparts and Peace Corps trainees. And we ask them this question, some of the stereotypes or some of the things that Malians say or think about Americans in general. And we all agree that Americans are very hard working people. It's just, work, and nothing else, trying to make as much money as possible. So very fast people, people who don't have time to just sit around and have tea for hours, people who are very socially disconnected because of their work agenda. So these are some of the stereotypes we hear about Americans. And a lot of Malians also would say that Americans know very little about their outside world. I mean, what we know, for example, about the U.S., because our educational system allows us to really cover the entire universe. We know, for example, what's happening in Australia. We know, for example, the geography and the history of the U.S., So it's not the same commitment from the U.S. Education leaders to provide that much diversity to the American students. So, I mean, these are on top of my head some of the things I can say, and I don't think any of my comments was mean at all. But I didn't mean to really make it nice for you or for your listeners. But I'm just transmitting here what I keep hearing from people from other Malians. So.
Well, I wish I could say that that view of America is entirely wrong, but I don't think it is entirely wrong. So, listen, thank you again. This has been very valuable, and I hope you'll have a chance to come back and talk to us again in the future.
It's been a real pleasure, and I'm looking forward to more conversation like that. And as the war evolves up north, I would love to stay in touch and give you more updates ASAP. Thank you so much for allowing me to be on.
Good. My pleasure. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.